We are Mem Dalet, the last of Perek Mem Dalet in Sefer Bereishis, and much of the commotion around Perek Mem Dalet is, of course, the first pasuk of Parshas Vayigash. Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Yehuda comes close to Yosef. Yehuda steps up and comes over to Yosef. So the Medrash, famous Medrash in the Perek Tzadi Gimel Beis in Seder Vayigash says, "Kinei hamlachim lo adu avdu yachad." That there's a pasuk in Tehillim. For behold, the kings assembled; they came together. Kinei hamlachim. For behold, the kings. So ze Yehuda v'Yosef. This alludes to Yehuda and Yosef. Avru yachdav ze mismala avra ze al ze nismali evra al ze. Together means that the one became filled with anger over that one, and that one became filled with anger over this one. Hema brahu kein tamau. They saw and were indeed astounded. By Yismuhu anashim ish l'reyehu, the men looked at one another in astonishment. Yivhalu nechpazu v'lo yachlu achiv. They were confounded and fled in haste. Radam achazam sham il. Period. But his brothers could not answer him because they were left disconcerted before him. So there is this fight going on between these two kings, represented by Yehuda. Represented by Yehuda and Yosef. So Amru Malachim Midainim Elu Im Elu. So Jacob, Yaakov's other son, said, "The kings are disputing one another. Anu Ma Ichbat Lanu. But what a concern is it to us? Ya'el Melech Midayin Im Hamelech. It is fitting for a king to dispute with a king. By gosh, you love Yehuda, and therefore our pasuk says that Yehuda comes up to Yosef." Okay, so what is the meaning of this medrash? This medrash is quoted that beyond just Yehuda approaching Yosef at this juncture, this is also the battle for kingship between the Shvatim, between the Shevet of Yehuda versus the Shevet of Ephraim, or the Shevet of Yosef, representing the Shevet of Yosef. And we see this a few times. We saw arguments between the children of Rachel and the children of Leah. We see that there is a discussion. We discussed it in the Yehoshua Shir this past Shabbos, or started discussing it, so we'll have a little more of that discussion, between Yehoshua and Kalev. A Kalev comes to Yehoshua asking for land, but perhaps embedded within that is a request for malchus, a request for leadership. And if we think about June 20th. Yes, thank you, Alan. June 20th. I said May 20th. June 20th. Okay. Hashtag Alan's right. So the... And furthermore, down the line, perhaps a fourth appearance of this is Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David. And Mashiach ben Yosef is going to lay the way for Mashiach ben David. So who is victorious in all this? Or who is ultimately going to be the king of the Jewish people? King is Yehuda. Right? Yosef seems to be a transitionary figure. And Yosef is the one who brings him down to Mitzrayim. Yosef is the one who brings him into Eretz Yisrael in the form of Yehoshua. Okay, and then ultimately down the line will be the Mashiach ben Yosef laying the way for Mashiach ben David. So Rav Soloveitchik, in a drasha he gave, probably one of the Saturday night shir that he gave in Boston, 1974, talked about in the Rav on the Parsha verbatim, page 397. So he quotes this medrash and says, okay, what's going on here? What is going on with Yehuda's approach to Yosef? What is their fight? What is their fight over exactly? So there is a pasuk when Yaakov is eventually giving out the brachos. So what is the pasuk that we base the kingship of Yehuda on? So it says, "Lo yisur shevet Yehuda,"
the scepter is not going to leave the place of Yehuda.
However, the parsha, that pasuk also says, "Karav ervatz karyei uchlavi miyikimenu," that he stays crouching like a lion. It's actually unclear. That pasuk, it talks about a what's the word for a lion? Anyone know? What? Aryeh, right? Aryeh is a lion, right? But there's another name for a lion also. Right? Anybody know where the synagogue furniture comes from in Israel? Levi, kibbutz Levi. Right, what is a Levi?
A young lion.
Also a lion. Right, so what does this pasuk mean? The pasuk in Parshas Vayechi says, page 276, in Vayechi, Perek Mem Tes Pasuk Ches, Pasuk Tes, says, Gur Aryeh Yehuda, 9, bottom of page 276. Gur Aryeh Yehuda, Miteref Bnei Elisa, a lion cub is Yehuda, Miteref Bnei Elisa, from the prey, my son, Kara Ravatz Karyeh, Uchlevi Mikimen, he crouches, lies down like a lion, and like an awesome lion, who dares rouse him? Uchlavi mi kemenes. So at least the interpretation that our scroll is giving here is that the Lavi is more powerful than the Aryeh. Now, they are in different phrases. It says, kara ravatz karyeh, kama, uchlavi mi kemenes. That's the way one is supposed to read it. However, the Rav quotes from the Kutzker Revi that kara ravatz karyeh uchlavi, that it crouches like an Aryeh and like a Lavi, that both a lion as well as whichever one they both represent, they are both, the ideal is that even when they are crouching, they are still considered lions. And that perhaps is what Yehuda has over Yosef. That Yehuda, not only is Yehuda powerful, not only does Yehuda represent Gevura, not only does Yehuda represent kingship, but Yehuda also represents the idea of failing and falling, and yet still being able to get up. That while Yehuda had the episode with Tamar, Yehuda had had faltered at that point. Yehuda also faltered by the selling of Yosef. Yehuda fell at that point, but yet Yehuda was also able to get up. So perhaps that is the idea of Yehuda, the ability to fall but yet to rise once again.
The symbolic of David HaMelech too, classically
thought
Jerusalem would collapse.
He
would immediately, when he was told to get out, he would.
Yehuda fell, but he also.
Yeah, David was a classic of.
Okay.
As I was told then.
Okay, what is the character trait of Yosef, though? Yosef is a. Yosef HaTzadik, right? He is known as Yosef HaTzadik. So, and what is the epitome of Yosef? What is Yosef most, I don't know, known for, or what is the largest message of Yosef's life? Probably what? Right, right. The ability that he didn't sin with Potiphar's wife. And in fact, it says that every day, it's true, but day after day after day, that Potiphar's wife came after him, and yet he never fell. Yet he never tripped from that. And
he maintained his Yiddishkeit kosar in a place where there were no Jews.
Yes, so he maintained his Yiddishkeit, but that is epitomized by the fact that he didn't end up with Potiphar's wife, right? That he separated. All the other stuff of, did he maintain Shabbos, Kasha, whatever he did there, right? The thing that the Gemara talks about the most as the symbol of the righteousness of Yosef is his ability that he never fell, that he never succumbed to that urge which was imposed upon him. So why not? How was he able to avoid that? So Yosef is the son of Rachel. And Rachel represents the idea that I'm not going to, I might deserve something, I might want something, I might very much be desirous of a certain outcome, but yet I'm willing to back off because you're almost afraid to say it's the right thing to do. Was it the right thing to do for Rachel to give up her husband, to give up her potential husband to Leah? Was that the right thing for her to do? That was a righteous act for her to do. That was almost beyond the right thing to do. That was giving in where a person is not obligated to give in to. And Yosef comes from Rachel. Yosef comes from the idea of being able to give in where you don't even have to give in. He writes here, and it's a little ambiguous. I didn't have enough time to look it up in the newer edition from the Rav's talks that maybe it makes it a little bit clearer there. But he writes here, when did he sacrifice? He sacrificed many times. When was the real sacrifice? The way he treated his brothers when they were at his mercy, particularly. What is more surprising than anything else is in the story of Yosef and his relationship with his brothers, more surprising than anything else, but simply when I come across these words, I'm taken aback. After all, I've read the words hundreds of times, always taken aback. Only a superhuman, only the son of Rachel could do it. Only the son of Rachel who gave away Yaakov to her older sister. Who was capable of that? Otherwise, it would be impossible. Now, it's unclear what he's referring to. Is he referring to the idea that he didn't reveal himself to his brothers? Or is it the idea that at the end he was able to forgive his brothers, that he treated his brothers well? Which one was it? It's unclear to me what the Rav is specifically referring to. But either way, it demanded a lot of self-control for Yosef to not spill the beans and not reveal who he was. Or, on the other hand, to treat his brothers well during the duration as well as at the end. Despite what they had done to him, both of them require self-control. Both of them, right? Even at the same time, they require self-control to not reveal himself, but yet treat him well. Right? Both of them. He would want to reveal himself, but he would also want to say, to jail with all you guys. Why, how do you guys check out what it's like to be in a pit for a little while? The fact that he didn't do either of those demonstrates a tremendous amount of self-control. He continues in the next paragraph. We discuss this specifically in the latter idea, that Yosef was mevater at the end. Yosef didn't want to make them feel bad. And he not only did he not take revenge, but he told them, no, 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 it's a good thing that I was put down here. So the Rav points out that, yes, it's true, we have a mitzvah to not take revenge. That is a prohibition of lo sikom, not to revenge. But it doesn't say that lo sikom means that just not to be vindictive. There's no mitzvah in the Torah that of one who inflicted harm upon me that I should go and tell him, listen, I know you inflicted harm upon me, that's what was supposed to happen, right? There's no mitzvah of that. The mitzvah certainly doesn't go that far. But yet, that's what Yosef did. Now it is, and we'll talk about this in the next couple of weeks, did Yosef ever actually forgive his brothers? That's unclear. You know, right? It's never enunciated clearly in the text that Yosef said to his brothers, I hereby forgive you, I mochel you for everything. But Yosef did tell them, don't worry about it, I'm not going to take any revenge on you and nothing's going to come of it. At least I'm not. It could be that Hashem will down the line.
Actually, Yosef's whole psyche, I'm exaggerating, I don't believe it much I'm saying, fixated on his dream, and he looks at the total of the package of his dream. My life is your life is. It's all going through this dream we had.
Mm-hmm.
I call it the dream, right?
Okay.
That's the identity. I believe, you know.
Okay.
People can put up with a hell of a lot in one case, and you can see the difference. They had certain positive identification of who they were.
Okay.
So
okay.
I'm saying that's part of his.
Sure.
I'm part of a bigger scheme. Not just me. It's not just you. We're in this game.
That's fine.
That's fine.
Good. Okay, so we have Yehuda representing the idea of Gevura, you have Yehuda representing the idea of strength, and Yosef representing the idea of Chesed. So at the end, so who's going to be king? Who's going to be king? The way he puts it here, the representative of Gevura or the representative of Kedusha? Who is the one that's ultimately going to be the king of the Jewish people? And the problem was submitted to Hashem, and Hashem decided in the favor of Gevura, that Gevura is going to be the one who is going to be the king. Why is that? So he quotes a very interesting proof here. The pasuk tells us in Tehillim, it's a pasuk by David HaMelech. Shir HaMelech said, David Hashem lo gavo libi v'loramu einai. This is parak kuf lamed aleph in Tehillim. The whole parak is three psukim. Shir HaMelech said, David Hashem lo gavo libi v'loramu einai v'lo halachti b'gdoz for the flows through many. He says, don't raise my heart. Don't raise my eye. Don't raise my eyes. I don't have to walk with greatness or miracles. Right? I'm willing to submit my nefesh. I'm willing to submit myself to anything that you want. But Yachel Yisrael Hashem Miatav Yadullah. But the hope is for Yisrael to be to Hashem from now and forever. That a person has the right to be righteous on their own cheshvan. A person can say, I'm going to be humble. I'm not going to demand things for myself. But a person doesn't have the right to do that on behalf of a tzibur. On behalf of a tzibur, on behalf of the congregation, on behalf of the Jewish people, a person has to be demanding. doesn't have the right to be mochel, the honor that's due to the Jewish people. So who is the one who's going to be the king? So Yehuda or David HaMelech one day might have been personally righteous. Personally, he might have said, okay, I don't need all of these things. But on behalf of the Jewish people, you need to be willing to fight. You need to be willing to say, I demand this. I demand this justice. I demand this for me. And I think we talked about this with Leah and Rachel. That Rachel was willing to submit, and Leah was saying, I'm the oldest. I'm going to marry Yaakov. I'm not going to give in just because it might look like the righteous thing to do, or it might look easy, or that's what Yaakov and Rachel, that's what they want. I'm going to make the demand. I want it, and it's necessary on behalf of the Jewish people. And that's okay. And that is what was able to give birth to kingship. Think about it. It's also with Yehuda and Tamar. Let's start with Tamar. Tamar made the demand. Tamar said, I'm going to be with Yehuda. Right, I'm going to figure out a way, whether it means dressing up like a harlot, whether it means risking my life, and whether it means possibly being thrown into the Kibshon Eish and into the fire, right, furnace, whatever. I'm going to give that a try because I demand that that the child of that the Mashiach, that the idea of the kingship is going to come, the idea of Yehuda is going to come through me. So that is perhaps the battle that took place. Yehuda comes up to Yosef and says, I demand that you give us back Binyamin. He and I not deserve it. We might not deserve it. Binyamin may not deserve it. Binyamin may be a Ghana for all Yehuda knows. Binyamin is never actually vindicated of the crime that he seems to perhaps have done. But Yehuda steps up to Yosef and says, I don't care. I don't care. I have made this oath, and not only have I made this oath, but others point out also, the promise was made to Father. I'm willing to do this, not just because if I don't bring back Binyamin, I'm going to lose my Olam Hazeh and my Olam Haba. But also, if I don't bring him back, our father Yaakov is going to die. And I'm willing to make a demand, not for myself, but for him. And that's the character trait that is necessary for Malchus. That's what we need for kingship, and that's why Yehuda wins the kingship over the righteousness of Yosef. What? Yehuda wasn't even the Bechor. Yehuda's the fourth oldest, yeah. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. Yosef is technically a Bechor through Rachel, yeah. Not really the Bechor from his father, but the Bechor through his mother.
Okay, get that from his demeanor? Because in the word, in the text itself, there's not much to...
No. I'm reading it off of this Medrash. This Medrash that there's this battle going on there in terms of the future of the kingship of Klal Yisrael. Is there a Tanakh in the room?
Right.
But the mere fact of Vayigash, the mere fact of stepping up and saying, I'm willing to fight you over this. I think that's what they're picking up on.
We have Yeshua's from Ephraim, and he leads us back in Eretz Yisrael.
Yes. So let me read you from Perek Yud Dalet of Sefer Yehoshua. This happens to just be what we're up to in the Yeshua Shir on Shabbos. But they've conquered most of the land, not all of the land. They've conquered most of the land. They're getting ready to do the Goral. They're getting ready to do the lots, where they're going to divide up the land, and each tribe is going to get whatever they're supposed to get. And then, where is it? Pasuk Vav. So Perek Yudalad Pasuk Vav in Yehoshua. Vayikshu v'nei Yehuda el Yehoshua b'Gilgal. The b'nei Yehuda, what's the key word there? Vayikshu. Vayikshu. They came close. The very same word of Vayigash appears in Vayikshu. One could do a search and see how often that terminology appears in Tanakh. I don't think it appears very often. But Yehoshua, the descendants of Kalev, right, and makes it clear, Vayikshu v'nei Yehuda el Yehoshua b'al Gad. B'nei Yehuda, led by Kalev, saying, you know the things that I did on behalf of Moshe. And then he goes on and describes the story of the spies, right, which is where Kalev made his name. Now, the whole terminology is very strange because he's talking to Yehoshua, right? If there's anybody that knows what Kalev went through, it's Yehoshua. But he describes the whole thing in first person. He says, and I did this, and I did that, and therefore, and I demand Chevron. That's what Kalev went up to Yehoshua demanding. So there's a bit of a question. Well, a lot of questions there. Well, why does he have to give this whole story over to Yehoshua? And in fact, it's very similar to over here, where Yehuda gives this whole story to Yosef. Right? We came down. We all wanted was food. And you gave us a hard time. So then we went back. And then we came forward. And then we asked our father. And now we're back. Right? So the same story happens here. That he gives the entire story over. And what's very odd is that he's describing it in first person, not second person. So, Rabbi Przanski has a piece, has a chapter here in his book, A Prophet for Today, where he points out that very interestingly that Kalev had a much bigger nisayon than Yehoshua, and Kalev's role in the spies was much more essential than Yehoshua. Why is that? Because Yehoshua was Moshe's guy. Right? Everybody knew he was Moshe's guy. And if the 11 tribes would have come back saying one thing, and Yehoshua would have said, coming back to the other thing, it would have been completely nullified, because everyone would have said, oh, well, he's Moshe's guy. Right. He's just doing it, right? The fact that Kalev came back, so that at least gave everybody a little bit of pause. That might have saved the situation somewhat. If it wasn't for Kalev, who knows what would have been. So Kalev is pointing out to Yehoshua, first of all, Yehoshua, you already got your reward. Your reward was, you were going to lead the Jewish people into Israel. Yeshua does not have male descendants, I believe. So the idea of having specific land for Yehoshua is not an issue. But the idea, but Kalev does have descendants. And Kalev says to Yehoshua, I'm ready, I want Hebron, and I'm ready, and I'm willing to fight for it, and I'm willing to take control. In fact, it's the first suggestion, Kalev is from Yehuda, it's the first suggestion of kingship, again, being taken from Yosef. And what does Yosef do? What does Yehoshua do? At the end, Yehoshua is the representative of Yosef. Kalev comes with this whole plan. I want Hebron, which hadn't yet been conquered. And I'm going to go ahead and conquer it. Yehoshua says, it's all yours. Yehoshua says, it's all yours. He's willing to be Mevater. I'm willing to give up on the honor. I'm willing to give up on the covenant due to me. And you can claim your rightful place as being the Melech, as being the Melech Yisrael. And I believe the first Shofet of the Jewish people was Othniel ben Kenaz, who's the nephew or the steps, I lost track, of related to Kalev, that he's the next leader. Now that goes back, the first king is also from the tribe of Binyamin, which is also from Rachel's family, but then immediately it goes to David and then Shlomo, and then it splits, of course, to the Malchus based David and the Malchus Yisrael, etc. But this is a constant issue. Who's right? The one who is righteous, who's the one who is going to demand? And ultimately, the one who's going to demand on behalf of all of Klal Yisrael things that we might not necessarily deserve it. we might be crouching. We might have fallen a few times. But yet I'm going to demand it anyway. So ultimately, that's what's going to be required to bring Mashiach.
You're basing yourself on the two sisters.